Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions, but get distracted and sidetracked so often that you might as well call us the Unfocused Fun Brocast. I am writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and the co-host of this podcast, sometimes known as D.O.B., a.k.a. America's Sweetest Boy, a.k.a. Big Dragon, a.k.a. Big Daniel, a.k.a. Dino Beans, a.k.a. Drippy D's, a.k.a. the Wild Clown of the Long Island Sound, a.k.a. the Late Bus, a.k.a. the West Side Detective, a.k.a. Mr. Next in Line, a.k.a. the Bermuda Triangler, a.k.a. Big D, and also occasionally, very rarely, known as Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, who is going to introduce himself his way right now. Take it away.
Hey, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I am a writer as well, and I occasionally go by my nicknames, a.k.a. Soren Over California, a.k.a. Sor Belinda, a.k.a. Heaven Sorbo, a.k.a. Swan Bon DeMarco, a.k.a. So Country for Bowen, a.k.a. Laxmi Singh, a.k.a. Soupy Poopy Bum Breeze.
Okay, so I gave you time
to
come up with these.
Yeah, but like an hour, and I've got things to do.
Okay.
You know this is a busy week for me.
Give me them one more time, and I'm going to stop you at the one that I want to stop you at.
Okay. Let me see if I can remember them. So I started with Soaring Over California,
Yeah, that one was clear. Like knowing you as a comedy writer, you were like, I'm going to write Soaring Over California down and then like trust the old dome to pick up the rest of the slack.
I did do Sor Belinda.
Okay.
You know Yor Belinda.
And you did Kevin, there was a Kevin Sorbo one there.
Yeah, but it was a Heaven Sorbo.
Heaven Sorbo, okay.
I thought that was a nice little touch. Swan Bon DeMarco.
That's the one that I want to hear more about.
Well, it's so I like to I don't want to be self-deprecating. I want to do the opposite of that because then people will think more of me. Do you understand? So like if I equate myself to someone like Don Juan DeMarco, then people will do that in their own brains as well, and they'll go, "Ah, I like that guy. He's a cool guy." And so if I just plant that seed, and it's real tough to make my name fit into that. And son, that sounds weird, but swan is a real word. And I could have done maybe brawn. That would have been nice. But I did bon, which is, as you know, one half of bon bon. And then didn't change the end.
I would
of it
argue
because...
it was both halves, but go on.
And then didn't bother to change the end at all because it still needs to make sense. And if I started to mess with the end, I think it would have really fallen apart. Instead, I came up with something perfect.
Yeah. So you think your efforts to endear yourselves to people in the present, you thought you would plant a reference to Don Juan DeMarco in the hope that that would find purchase.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy.
Right now. Right now he is.
Johnny Depp played him.
And Johnny Depp is also a cool guy in the present.
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, like the jury is literally out. You don't want to stop on Soupy Poopy Bum Breeze, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that, too.
So my mom, when I was a kid, used to call diarrhea Soupy Poopies, which is such like a visceral, hard name to take. And I just grew up thinking that's what everyone called them. And found out later that's not the case. And then also there was a book about like early early colony. I can't remember where, somewhere on the East Coast. And this guy's giving his account of like them hiking up a trail and he was catching the bum breezes of the man in front of him. And I thought that's a fun word for a fart.
Bum breeze. Oh, bum breeze means fart. Okay. Is there a word that your family used for fart growing up?
Yeah. Mostly it was just fart.
Like it was fart,
my brother and I would,
like if there was like a smell, like if someone clearly farted and there was a smell in a room, my parents would ask who killed a duck. That was what we knew to mean who farted, because, and I asked my dad about this like maybe 5 months ago, because I was like, hey, where did this come from? Why did you say who killed, why do I know killed a duck as a euphemism for fart? And he was just like, well, it's a more polite way of saying fart. Like, it's better than saying fart, isn't it? Who killed a duck? And also, like, if you stepped on a duck, don't you think that's the sound it would make?
What? No, that's psychotic.
Somewhere between quack and squish, I think that's I think that's dead on, actually.
And this is specifically how dead ducks smell? And immediately,
no, it wasn't a smell
also,
thing. It was a sound thing.
Oh, it's just sound. Okay. There was, you know, we did a shoot once out in Idlewild with the 5 Second Films guys, and Polly and Alec were there.
And Polly Prado and Alec Owen.
Yeah. And Alec got up in the middle of the night, was walking across the floor, and farted audibly. And Polly went, Jesus, Alec, you're going to fall through the floor. And then I just sat up the rest of the night thinking what that could possibly mean.
Wow.
And I still think about it.
Yeah, is it? No. Is it like
he could fire so hard that it would blast downwards into the floor and collapse it?
Right. So like, if one is this can't be the podcast. This can't be what we talk about.
Well, I have a question for you. That's not like a leading into our show. Just in terms of what you just said. Next in line.
Yeah. Oh, that was the nickname that you latched onto?
Well, there were some really good ones in there. That was the one I didn't understand.
I'm not the main event now, but I will be at some point.
Okay.
Oh, that answer didn't work for you?
And Angler. What was the Angler
the Bermuda,
one?
The Bermuda Triangler. That marries my love of islands and my love of fishing.
You don't want to do the Bermuda Tri-State Angler?
No.
I guess that would get it gets too convoluted then.
I don't want to fucking throw mud in a nickname.
Okay, well, I'm not going to work through these different drafts with you. That's fine. You came with something polished, yeah. And I appreciate that. Let's just move on with the show. Thanks to Postmates for supporting Quick Question. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I use Postmates. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code QQ.
Yeah, we'll move on with the show. This is the show where we ask each other questions and give each other answers. We like to do, at this point, a check-in about how we have been moving through quarantine. Do you have any updates for me about that? With what you've been doing?
Yeah,
I do.
Okay,
great.
Yeah. Two things. I had a tenuous moment where I almost killed my cucumber plant.
Oh, you were so proud about that in two episodes ago.
I came in high and arrogant. I realize that now. And I was like, my wax wings melted in the sun because I just flew too high. I came out one day and there were all these little tiny green grasshoppers, like baby grasshoppers on it. And I was like, those things are going to eat it. And so I got a natural bug spray, and it's for ants and things like that outside, and I thought, what's natural? And I looked at the ingredients, and it's just like a bunch of fucking like cinnamon and stuff like that, egg putrescence, I don't even know what that is. And so I spray it on the plant because I'm like, oh, fuck you bugs. And I also spray it on another little seedling, this poor little seedling that was counting on me, of rainbow kale. Came out the next day, it had just fried.
They make
the
rainbow kale
all
now?
Of them.
I thought it was just rainbow chard.
No, there's rainbow kale.
Wow, that sounds gross. Go on.
And I just destroyed it. I destroyed like I would say probably 70% of the leaves, just shriveled up and died. I fucked off that whole little seedling, like it's dead. There's no such thing as rainbow kale anymore. And fortunately the cucumber plant has started to grow some new leaves. The cucumber itself that's on there that's growing is still growing, so like the plant's gonna make it, but I thought for sure that was the end of it. And then also one other thing, Dan, my son is riding a two-wheel bike.
Really? How? Okay, yeah. So that's very exciting. How much time passed between... I assume you trained him on a bike with training wheels, correct?
Yeah, so most people will say this. They say, do a balance bike now, which means that's those bikes that don't have any pedals, and the kids just kick, and then they balance on it for a little while. But I did the old training wheel route that you and I did when we were kids. And he had that bike for a year. And then one day during quarantine, I was just like, you know what? I think we should try doing it without these. And I'll hold onto the bike the whole time. And he was reticent. And then I would go out there with him. I live on a cul-de-sac. So I would hold onto the handlebar and I'd hold onto the back seat. And we got to a point where after a while, I didn't have to hold onto the handlebar. I just had to hold onto the back seat. And then after a while where I was just secretly letting him go because he did not want me to. And didn't feel like he was ready to ride a bike. And I sort of forced him into it, which I do with a lot of things. And he started doing it. And then he could do it on his own. And after that, he was really proud and very excited and then only wanted to do it on his own. So now he can't start by himself, but he can turn and he can stop and he can ride straight. That's the good stuff. That's so exciting.
I bet he loves it.
He does. He's very, very excited. You can see that autonomy happen, like that occur to him in his brain. The same way like when you got your driver's license and you're like, oh shit, I could go anywhere. I can just see it on his face when he's riding faster than I can run and him just like looking out over the horizon and being like, but I could just keep going.
Learning how to ride a bike seems like one of the biggest hurdles of childhood because you start them early and for a very long time, it's just frustrating. And if you're 3 years old or 4 years old, you don't have the capacity to understand that like I will be rewarded in the future if I put work down now. Like you just don't have that. And the fact that you can like push him over that edge is very admirable because like I remember learning how to ride a bike and being small and just thinking like, you know what, this I fell down once and like fuck this. I never want to do it again.
Yeah.
Because most of the other games I play, I don't fall down and it's not scary. So I'm just going to like focus on those things.
Yeah. It's so hard to convince a kid that you're not good at anything immediately. You have to learn how to do it. And it takes work to learn how to do it. And putting the work in feels like such a waste of time when you're a little kid. It's like, why? Why would I do that? Because you also don't have the peer pressure of other people who are doing it around you, especially during quarantine. So it's all me. It's all me being an asshole dad being like, no, I think this is important. Let's just try it one more time. And it wasn't us like going out. I recollect learning how to ride a bike, my dad taking me down to a parking lot in town and then us spending an afternoon there and me learning. That's not how my son can do it. We did it in, we went down the street, we came back up and that was it for the day. The next day we did the same thing. And then the next day, and sometimes I'd be like, well, can we just go a little bit further towards the shade over there? And he would be willing to do that. And so we're spending maybe 7 minutes a day learning to ride a bike. And we did that for 2 weeks and now he's got it.
That's so exciting. Is he fearless on it now?
No, he gets scared. He's got like the handlebar wiggles. Anytime that he starts to get scared at all, it really has an effect on his whole body. Cause like, You can sense when he's freaking out a little bit, and then the handlebars start to go.
Does he want to go fast?
He does. Yeah, he wants to be a motorcycle. He does things that I didn't know he knew how to do. Like he revs the engine. Like he guns the handlebar in a way where I'm like,
you're gonna flood the engine, buddy. What are you doing?
He does a kickstart, which he thinks is really funny. And then he just makes a big audible noise when he rides around. That kind of stuff. It's adorable. But he panics every once in a while. And he'll get over that.
That's very fun.
Yeah, it's exciting. How's your quarantine, Dan?
I made my first move from my apartment. I left Hell's Kitchen for the first time. I went to New Jersey to see both my brothers and sisters-in-law. And my nieces and nephews, and just like had a nice barbecue and played with people and hugged people for the first time in 112 days at this point. So that was nice. And like, it I don't want this podcast to turn serious. I woke up very scared, like physically nervous about it, and willing to pull the plug at the last second because it's such a change from what I've done from the last 3 months. But I pushed through it and went to go see family, and it was very nice. And I have no—
That's great.
No horror stories about it. I mean, my brother is kind of a farmer, so he's got a chicken coop. So at the end of the night, we had to fend off some raccoons because the coop is attached to a shed, and the raccoons can get into the coop, but they can't get into the shed. So the chickens got into the shed, and the raccoons were in the coop, and my brother was in the shed trying to close the latch to keep the chicken safe, and he was like, "Go into the coop and close the latch from the outside." And I was like, "Oh, no, because I'm not going to get into a coop with raccoons because I'm not going to break quarantine for the first time in 113 days and then get rabies."
So just sort of for my own, the second, like, geographically place everything, the coop is near the shed, but where's the cucumber plant in relationship to all that?
The cucumber plant is very far away. There's like, so a fence that faces the woods, and then there's a fenced-in coop that obviously has four walls, but one of those walls is the wall of the shed, the outdoor wall of the shed.
Okay.
And there's a small door on the outside of the shed where the chickens move from the coop into the shed at night to keep them safe. But the raccoons found a way to get into the coop part of it, and we were trying to make sure they didn't get into the shed part of it.
They're smart.
They're smart. They're cute. Sucks.
I know. It's sad. It's really scary how cute they are. And the babies. If I've seen shows where they have to like remove raccoons from a chimney, and the little babies, when they pull them out, what they do is they cover their eyes because they think if they can't see you, they're hidden. And it's just adorable to see these little tiny raccoon cubs with their hands over their eyes because they're scared.
That's so fucking cute. We want to thank Postmates for sponsoring this show. I love Postmates so much. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I actually think about it the second I wake up in the morning is, oh, I'm gonna give myself a treat tonight. And that treat means that I don't have to cook and I'm going to have food brought right to my door, which is why I love Postmates right now, because they're bringing food literally right to me and I don't even need to leave the house. I don't even need to open the door. Given what's going on right now, they created non-contact delivery. So now when I order from local restaurants, everything gets left right outside my door. They also have Postmates Pickup, which I have been using to order takeout from my favorite local restaurants. Hey! Hey! Listen up!
Me?
You! Ooh. You guys need to be supporting your neighborhood spots right now! I have only been ordering local because it's a great way to support my community. And Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier by picking up everything I need from Walgreens, from 7-Eleven, and just dropping it off outside my door. All you need to do to live like me, a king, is download Postmates on iOS or Android. Find your favorite local restaurants and get anything you want delivered within the hour. And if that wasn't enough, which by the way, it is, for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app, Postmates, and use code QQ. That's code QQ for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Let's get into the show. Mostly we ask each other questions, but I think one of the ways that we've pivoted on the show is telling each other stories and then having the other person tell us what we did wrong in these stories. And when I say us, Soren tells me what I did wrong in this story. And so that's what's going to happen here. I don't have a question. I'm just going to tell Soren a thing that happened, and I'm going to ask him if I did everything right.
Okay. Let me just like mentally prepare.
And I want to preload this because it's going to sound like I'm telling you a boastful story about me doing the right thing, but I promise you it's going to take a hard turn into me being useless. So I had a day off.
Okay.
I went to the park to read my book, and then I left the park to go back to my apartment. And I came across a man who had clearly very recently taken a spill off his motorized bike. He was seated upright on the ground, and his bike was next to him. And I didn't see the accident, but I saw him. He was dressed in full medical scrubs, clearly post-accident. Another guy came up to ask how he was doing, and he said he was fine. And the guy was like, okay. And then that wasn't enough for me, so I said, hey, man, you look pretty banged up. This looks real bad. And he said, what do you think I should do? And remember, he's in full scrubs, and I'm wearing swim trunks and a bright red tank top I got for free at a Nerf event 6 years ago. So the fact that he's deferring to me for medical expertise means that things are different now. But he asked me what he should do, so I say, don't move, and I call 911. And I say, I need an ambulance, and I immediately get connected with a dispatcher who's like, what's going on? And I am fucking flying. I say, I have a bike accident involving a male, late 30s, large bump with bruising and blood on his right temple, abrasions and swelling on both wrists, gash on his right arm. He seems to be favoring his left leg. I haven't seen anything there. Patient is conscious but disoriented. And then the dispatcher was like, great, where are you? And I was like, Manhattan. Because I never know where I am at any given time. I have the worst sense of direction.
Without the T's, like a child, Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly like that. And I was like, so you know the Hudson River Park? We're at like the entrance of that. And he was like, oh, the entrance of the Hudson River Park? And it's like, I mean, not the entrance. Not like where people get onto the park, but like where I get onto the park. It's where like me and Jackson, we cross under a bridge. And he's like, a bridge? And I'm like, no, but like a thing. We cross under a thing. And then we get into the park. Really, I feel like if you just drive towards the Hudson, you'll see me. I really went from feeling like the biggest big shot on the planet to a guy who doesn't know which way north is at any given time. The ambulance did eventually get there, and like,
that's
there,
good.
Yeah, there were still some like big shot things, like the guy, the dispatcher was talking to me and was like giving me first aid advice if the patient was gonna go AWOL or whatever. And I was talking to him and I was like, the man says he wants to get on his bike and ride himself to a hospital. And the dispatcher was like, you can't let him do that. And I was like, fucking copy that, I guess. And then I just had to make sure this guy didn't get on his bike and drive to the hospital. And then eventually flagged down an ambulance and got the guy onto the ambulance, and they went away, and things are good, I guess. It would have been better if I could have been like, I'm at this location, and instead of what I did do, which was like, drive towards the river, please.
Was this man a doctor?
I don't know. He worked in labor and delivery at Mount Sinai West.
Okay, so he works in a hospital. He knows.
And so, like, I understood as a person who's like, fallen off his bike and injured himself. I completely understood the impulse of just like, if I can just get to where I want to be, I'll sort this all out. You know, especially because like you like adrenaline is pumping and you're in shock, and this is a guy who just finished his shift at the hospital, so he is embarrassed and he's in shock. And he's just thinking, like, if I can, let me just get back to my hospital with the people that I know, and we will figure it out together. And I'm not allowed to let him do that. I have to just be like, no, you have to stay here and wait for an ambulance to come.
No, the reason you're not allowed to let him do that is because you already called.
Yeah. Right. It's like, you know, and that's that. Like the.
So you set a chain reaction in. There was like our immediate train reaction that they couldn't opt out of, and
right,
you couldn't opt out of.
Right, that was the ace up my sleeve with the dispatcher who was like, tell him that an ambulance has already been dispatched. I was like, great, that's fucking great, because we can't have an ambulance show up to no one here. So,
right.
Good. That's the thing that's going to stop him from getting on his bike and going to the hospital himself.
Okay. Do you think that he actually had to go to the hospital?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Just like looking at him, you could tell he was in bad shape.
Yeah, I came upon him and he was sitting on the ground with a large bump and bruise and blood on his fucking head and his wrists, and just like the fact that he was comfortable sitting in the middle of the street.
And asked you what he should do. Okay, that makes sense. I think you did the exact right thing.
We did also, like, another guy and his daughter came up and, like, hung out with us for a while. And one of the reasons that this guy didn't want to get an ambulance, because he was like, what about my bike, though? My bike is here. I'm just worried about leaving my bike here. And me and the other guy who were there looked at each other and we were like, oh, we'll take care of that. You know the way you lie to people.
Was it a motorcycle or a motorized?
Yeah.
Okay.
And thankfully, the ambulance took it with them to the hospital.
Oh, good. So it could also get through some triage. Was it in bad shape too? And did he ask you that question over and over? What's going to happen to his bike?
No, just the one time. And anytime he was very good. Like, it's very clear that he was a skilled medical professional, because anytime he wanted to do the wrong thing and I would explain to him, like, no, you can't ride that bike, no, you shouldn't move your neck, back, or head unless absolutely necessary, he would be like, I know you're right. Like, he said all the right things.
Okay.
He was just a little bit disoriented.
And to really identify whether or not you did all of the right things, there's an amount of time that it takes when you get off the phone and the ambulance gets there. I'm guessing that was probably, what, like 20 minutes?
Oh, it was so short. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. And what did you guys talk about during that
time? We just moved him from the middle of the street to the side of the street, and that's it.
Oh, yeah. And they were there already? Oh, Dan, this is like a moment of heroism for you.
I know, but wouldn't it have been better if I knew where I was in the world?
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's going to be... Look, no hero looks back and is like, yep, I did everything right. Got it all right. There's going to be some mistakes. And I guarantee that since then, while you've been off walking around, you're like, well, where am I right now? Let's just make sure I know, just in case something else happens. And you know exactly where you are, right?
I think that's why I bring this up. No. I think the second that GPS became widely accessible, I stopped paying attention to where I was at any given time forever. Like, now it's on all of our phones. Everyone has GPS on their phones and they can navigate to anywhere. But even before that, as soon as, like, TomToms and Garmins existed that gave you directions, that my brain was like, oh, thank God, I don't need this part anymore. And in, I guess I want to say 2003, since then I have not paid attention to where I am or directions for anything at all.
Okay. I don't think that's totally crazy. Especially in a city where you walk everywhere, you know where you're generally where you're going.
I did
going
it in LA too. I used GPS to. Every single time I went to your house for years. Because, like, as soon as I find out I don't need to think about a thing, then I stop thinking about it. Yeah.
You let it go. This is like a very Sherlock Holmes moment for you, Dan, because you immediately identified all these crazy factors about this man. You were so careful to notice that he was where his abrasions were, what leg he was favoring, that he was injured in a war previously. Like, you know that exactly what his job is because he's got ink on his left hand or whatever the fuck is going on with you. But you also don't know that the sun doesn't revolve around the earth. Like, you don't know directions. So I think you're in, like, good company as far as, like, mm-hmm. great protagonists.
Right.
This is a good story. You should tell this. You should tell this, and people will say, That's amazing. I don't know where I am any at any given moment either. And you, you'll be fine.
I feel like if you were in this situation, you would know what to say to the person who had gotten injured, and you would also know how to get the ambulance to where you are. Like, I fully had to flag an ambulance down. Like, I'm not exaggerating when I say just, like, drive down 59th Street and look for a guy who's waving his arms. That's what I had to do.
If you could have started this, Dan, by saying, quick question, have you ever seen someone bleeding in the middle of the road and had to make sure that they got to a hospital okay? And I could have said, why, yes, I have. Do you want to hear that story? On a 4th of July once, I rode my bike to a party down by the beach and then was riding back home. And a man called from deep in the bushes in the middle of the night and asked which way was a certain street. And I was like, well, it's that way. And as I told him, I realized he was staggering a lot and he was glistening. And like, that's like glistening in a streetlight. And I was like, oh, he's covered in something. And I got off my bike and I was like, are you okay? And he said he was fine. And I looked at him and the whole back of his shirt had blood down it. And the back of his head, I could actually like see the pink, like head wound. In the back, it's just the worst. And I mean, like later in this story, like when I was closer to him and everything, like I could smell it and it was rough. But he was not in good shape. He had clearly taken a huge fall or something. And so I got him to sit down on the curb with me. We helped him down. I was with my friend Dan Campana, who you know.
Dan Campana helped him down. Designed the logo for this show.
That's right. Designed the logo. So I help him down on the curb. So I've got him by his armpits and I'm like lowering him down because he's wobbly. He's very, very wobbly. I need him down on the ground. And he just leans into me and I just got like blood on my shirt. Somebody else's blood all over my shirt. And then I sit down on the curb with him and we're just sort of waiting. We call an ambulance. This is like on a street corner. So I don't totally know these street names at all, but it makes it very easy for me that I have like that right there in front of me. So I never even had to worry about being like, oh shit. Well, do you know where I live? Could you just go to my house and then like two blocks east right. and one more block south of that?
Right. Do you know where me and Colleen saw that rat that one time? We're a block over from there.
I'm also like famously bad with directions anyway. That's part of the reason why I'm like, no, Dan, you're a hero. Don't let anyone tell you differently. You're great. And then we had to wait. And we waited like 20 minutes for the paramedics to come. And so I'm just sitting there with this guy. And so we talk for a very long time. And he's like, are they going to let me drink there? And I was like, no, probably not. And he had some alcohol left. And he's like, can I finish this? And I was like, yeah, I think so. And he's kind of shaking a little bit, like maybe he's coming down a little bit. And so it starts to become evident that this guy's an alcoholic, that he's maybe a transient, mm-hmm. and he's not super happy with the way his life is going, and occasionally throws out that he would rather he just die there. And I'm like, fuck. Like, no, that's not the way this is supposed to go. Like,
Is there like pressure on his head wound at this point? Are we holding anything fucking in?
I didn't do anything.
Is he though?
No. Okay. I don't even think he knows he's really injured because he keeps asking why we're there. And I know that he's got like a concussion and I'm not seeing brains, but I am. This is a stapler is going to be needed for this job. And it's just, you know, head wounds just bleed like crazy. So he's like, I don't know how much blood he's lost, but there's a lot of it. And I kind of get like a sense of where he lives and stuff. And he's staying on this guy's front porch. This guy in the neighborhood is letting him live on his front porch while he like tries to get jobs and a place where he can get mail and stuff like that. And finally the ambulance comes, they take him away. And I just remember where he lives. And so a couple days later, I was like, oh, I should check on him. I should go see. And I go to this guy's house. The guy answers the door who actually lives there. And he's very dubious about why I'm there and why I'm looking for this guy. He's like, who wants to know? And I try to explain the whole situation. And he goes, oh, he's in the hospital. And he didn't know where his transient had been. He'd just been missing for a while. And I got there, realized exactly what had happened because there's a sapling out in front of the house that's been knocked over. So like he tried to grab onto this little tiny tree. It didn't hold his weight. He fell over, and then there's just this splatter on the ground right where his head hit and busted open, basically. And then a trail of just drops of blood in one direction. It couldn't have been more Scooby-Doo-ish in terms of how the clues were presented to me. And then I kept trying to check in again, and the guy was just like stonewalling me. He didn't want me anywhere near this other guy. So like there was like a weird relationship there happening, and it just, every door I opened was to a darker and darker room the entire time, where I was just trying to be a cool hero and like be like, just look out for this dude who seemed like he wasn't doing that great, and be like, well, who else is in this guy's life? Like, who can I talk to about this and tell them the things that he told me? And there was nobody there. And I was like, well, I'm not also going to be that person. And so I stopped looking.
I also want to back up a little bit. So this was 4th of July, you said, right?
Yeah.
You were on your bike with Dan. You were clearly going to a party, I assume?
We're coming back from a party.
Oh, you're coming back from a party. Okay.
Like 1 in the morning. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to know if after this incident, you had then gone to a party. Because I had done that before. Like I was driving with a friend. She was driving in front of me, and she got in a bad car accident. And I did all the things you're supposed to do. I got her out of the car. I got her information. We got the information of the people who hit her, and we waited for the police to come. And then when she and I and another person who was part of our caravan, who was in the car behind me, were like, all right, so we're all healthy and safe. Like, there's no real physical damage. So onward to the party. And I just remember being at that party and just like shaking and being like, I don't think I can hang with people right now. I used up all of my energy a minute ago.
Yeah, it's you're kind of like running on adrenaline. Then after that, you're like, oh shit, why do I feel so hungover?
Yeah.
And it's only because you're coming down from your body being like, okay, all right, we're going to use up everything that we had in reserves for the next 3 days.
Right. And then for someone to be like, okay, now, Cheesecake Factory, what do we think? Like, oh no, I'm gonna like lay down right here on the street and sleep for 14 hours, please.
I have to run this thing through my mind over and over again to make sure I did it all exactly right. I'll need at least 14 hours for that. Yeah, I know that feeling. Well, Dan, I think you did the right thing. I think you did everything good.
I think so too. I think the
I'm proud of you.
Thank you, man. A big thing I miss is that because I've talked to everyone in my family about this, obviously, and they're like, "What was his name? Are you checking in with him?" I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know." As soon as he got under the ambulance, I was like, "You don't need me anymore, right?" Okay,
that's
good.
What it should
I'm gonna
be.
Go and like drink way too early in the day because this was a lot thrown at me early in the morning.
Yeah. It was so, during my experience, it was so clear. Every time that I reached out, it was so clear. No one wanted me fucking doing that. No one, please stay out of our lives. Like, there's a movie called Enduring Love that's, what's the most recent James Bond? Who's that?
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, Daniel Craig's in it. And it's about these guys that are out like they don't know each other. They're out at picnics or whatever. And a hot air balloon's getting out of control. And these guys all try to stop this hot air balloon. And one guy holds onto the rope for too long, falls, and basically splits open on the ground. And these guys come and find him. So it's like this moment where they're all trying to do something right. And they didn't get it done. There's one guy who really suffered from it. And then one of the other guys who had tried to help now falls in love with Daniel Craig and won't leave him alone. It's just like obsessed with him because they had this crazy experience together. And I think like my dad used to be on Mountain Rescue, and he would say, I would ask him, I'd be like, do these people must call you all the time? The people that you pulled off of mountains must be so thankful. And he said, no, they're not. They're embarrassed and they want you out of their life. Like, they want you to not be there because this was their worst moment. And they just like you to please not remind them of that constantly. And they want you gone.
That's so
and
funny
so,
because like the yeah. the premise of the Chuck Palahniuk book, Choke, the guy who wrote Fight Club, you know how to pronounce his name.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah, sure. He wrote this book, Choke, and part of it is the protagonist of it has scammed so many people over his life because he feigns choking in restaurants and then gets saved by the people who perform the Heimlich maneuver on him, and they form a special bond, And those people send him Christmas and birthday cards full of money every year because they're so bonded.
Thankful.
And yeah. And I assumed that was based in something real. I assumed that, like, if I did get the information of this person who I didn't save his life, but I just called an ambulance, if we did exchange information, then I would get a Christmas card from him. But you're saying a thing that is based in real life, which is no, that doesn't happen.
I don't think that happens at all. In fact, wow. I think it's probably the person who does the saving who's more inclined to be like, I have an investment in this person now. Like, I want this person in my life. And so that you want to try and reach out to them and like make sure they're okay and that they're doing great. It's that Ben Franklin effect that we talk about on Cracked, which is you're less likely to really like somebody who does something nice for you than you are to like somebody when you do something nice for them and they're properly thankful.
Right.
And so he would use that to his benefit all the time. Like Ben Franklin would give out books and things like that. He knew people wanted. Other way around. He would ask for things that he knew other people had.
Yeah.
Because once they would give them those things, then they had like this sunk cost fallacy in him. And they would be more friendly to him, especially because he would then be profusely thankful for whatever they gave him. And it just makes you like people more and more and more the more that you do for them. It's like probably hardwired into how we take care of dogs or how we take care of babies.
Yeah.
It's my dad was like, yeah, no, they want nothing to do with you. They're embarrassed that it happened. It's a part of their life they don't want to remember over and over again. And they just want you out of it.
Huh.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, then I'm glad I didn't exchange information with that guy who...
Yeah, I think you did it right.
Hopefully is doing fine now.
Dan, I have a question for you.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's a quick one.
Oh, good.
Is there something in a movie that scared you out of ever doing it in real life? A movie that was so scary or presented something to you that was like as horrible that it scared you from ever wanting to do it? I'll give you some examples. Like when Jaws came out, no one wanted to go out in the ocean anymore. Or when Psycho came out, no one wanted to get stabbed in the shower anymore.
Are people not doing that anymore?
No, they stopped. Yeah.
This is PC culture. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's run amok. No one, the Gen Z or whatever, none of them are getting stabbed in showers and it shows.
Is there something from a movie that was so scary to you and you know it's benign now, but it still kept you from ever doing it? I'll go first.
Yeah, please go
so
first.
So you can think.
Because like, I know I'm not fearless, but... I kind of feel like I am right now. So you go first.
I'm glad this one made you feel good. Okay, well, there's a movie called Sniper. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a Tom Berenger movie.
They made like four of them, right?
Yeah, but this is the very first one. Do you know it?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the movie Sniper, at one point they're wandering through the jungle, you know. As they do, it's Tom Berenger and Billy Zane, and he's training Billy Zane, and they get to a place where they're nipples deep in some water, and Tom Berenger says to him,
"Is that
don't
the best
be in the
way
water.
You could have described that depth?"
tit deep,
tit chest,
tit deep.
Okay, fine. Two men are deep. Either nipples or tit deep. You wouldn't say chest. You wouldn't say Tom Berenger is chest deep in the water. It's got to be nips or tits.
Look, he's a barrel-chested gentleman. You don't. The chest is so much of his body percentage. You don't know which part.
Okay.
All right. So
keep painting.
Okay, he's bosom deep, and he says, "Don't pee in the water." And Billy Zane's like, "Why not?" He's like, "There are." I think he says there are amoebas that swim up your pee hole and then like get inside of you. And that scared the shit out of me when I was like 9 watching this movie, to the point where I can't pee in water. It's such a terrifying thing, prospect for me, that I can't possibly do it. Even if it's like a pool, I can't. I suppose that's good for everyone else, but I've been in the ocean before where, you know, you're at the beach and you got to pee and some people are like, well, just go out in the ocean. I've tried. It's not happening. It's never going to happen.
Really?
Because I'm just worried about these microscopic bugs getting up inside of me.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I know that it's not happening. They're in like a swamp. They're in the jungle, a place I've never really even been. But it's just the mention of it.
You've never peed in the ocean or a swimming pool?
Never. Well, certainly not since I was 9. I'm sure when I was a baby, I probably peed in a swimming pool. But
yeah,
no,
sure.
I've never... I don't have a single memory of peeing while I'm submerged in water.
this is so difficult. I've been with you when we've been drinking in Vegas in swimming pools.
Yeah.
You just held it?
No, I go and see. There in Vegas is a piece of cake. There are amenities everywhere. So there are bathrooms. A lot of times they're long lines for them, but I will just sit there and wait until everyone's done with their Coke, and then I will go in and I will pee.
Goodness gracious. Because you're worried about things crawling up your urethra and whatnot.
Yes, very much so.
I don't have that. I pee everywhere. I have a very similar one, though, it hasn't impacted my life in a way that, like, I maneuver my day-to-day activities to avoid the possibility of this, but the late 90s Mummy movie with Brendan Fraser, there are a bunch of scenes where these scarab beetles get burrowed under a protagonist's skin, and you can see the indent of them crawling around, like, through their body. You can see that there is a beetle under someone's skin maneuvering about, and that is a thing that I think about all the time, that I'm very fearful of. A bug getting inside me and then crawling around and doing whatever it's gonna do. I mean, like, there's no way the bug gets in there and is like, I cleared your heartburn up. They're gonna do something nefarious. And
they're just gonna swim across your eyes at some point.
Yeah,
you just
and
know
I'm
it.
Just like very worried about it. And just like seeing, I think the thing that most worries me, because I've also seen like documentaries of people who have had eggs of like wasps planted under their skin. And then you watch the eggs grow in their skin. And then you hatch, and you see these wasps shoot out of their forearms or whatever. So that is also part of it that I hate. So, like, seeing the bug inside me is bad, but also the process of getting the bug out is also terrifying to me. Like, I need to stop it and then cut into myself and then expel the bug from me. And I have no suicidal tendencies in my life. I have so much I want to do all the time. But if I saw a beetle crawling through my arm and someone was like, oh, all you need to do is cut your bicep open and then free the beetle, I'd be like, no, this is it for me. That's it. I can't.
Yeah.
I've weighed the options and I can't do that. The idea of cutting into myself and watching a bug leave me is too much. It's too much for me to, like, I can't do that and then get stitched up and then start my day the next day.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be cutting myself open. What I'll do is I will give you the knife, and I'd like you to just stab me in the heart.
Yeah.
And that will be the end of it. And neither one of us has to worry about this ever again. Yeah, it's like the minute something gets inside of you that's a big and foreign, it's like, well, it's not my body anymore. I will leave. I'll go. It can have it.
So what you're describing is an incredible movie on Shudder called The Beach House, where a woman gets a horrible worm creature embedded in her foot, and she like fucking sees it go in there, and then she has to crawl from the beach to the house, titular moment, and remove the worm from her foot. And it's so visceral and it's so well done, and like I understand that she probably feels good to get the worm out of her foot, but at the same time, just like
leave the worm. Let the worm. Yeah. The worm's in charge now. I can't do it. I could never be that woman. I'm not as strong as the woman from the beach house. Just no. Let the worm call the shots.
I'd forgotten that moment was in The Matrix too. Like The Matrix felt like such like a easy, fun, cool movie to watch. And then I got lightheaded again rewatching it because there's a scene where they pull a spider out of his belly button, mm-hmm. like suck it out with a vacuum. And it is a very visceral moment because there's fluids and stuff like that, like pink stuff in him. And it's so hard to watch. It's really, really uncomfortable that I'm like, leave the spider. Surely there's another way. The bug you're describing, Dan, that you've seen hatch from people is called a botfly.
Botfly, that's right. Thank you.
I think as long as you and I stay out of the Amazon, we're going to be just fine. Those are flies that catch mosquitoes, lay their eggs on the noses of mosquitoes, the proboscis or whatever the fuck it's called. And then when a mosquito injects that into you, the egg is now in you. And there's some cows down there that have like bulbous balls all over them. And the larva is protecting you too. So it's protecting you against infection because that's a pretty big wound. So if you were to just pull it out, you run the risk of like some very serious infection. That's why you watch people wait until these things hatch on their own. But they're spiked to make sure that they stay put inside of you, make sure you can't just pull them out. And then they have a little hole where they breathe through this top. And if you go in water, they start to wriggle around inside of you because they're drowning. And is everybody still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just once again reminding our audience why I don't need to be on this podcast and it should just be Soren talking. Because I was I think there are sometimes fucking bugs in arms. I saw like part of a YouTube documentary where a thing happened and you jump in like, well, here's the actual story.
There's the worst part, and this is a biology teacher told me this, so he could be lying to me, so take it with a grain of salt. I think he was telling me the truth. If it's in a part of your body that's not very fleshy, like they're not getting a lot of resources, like your head on the outside of your skull, they will that you can put a steak next to it or like a raw piece of meat, and the botfly will smell it and sometimes crawl out of you and into that, so that it can be in a more suitable environment.
Is that better for it to crawl out of you at that moment? Is that better than crawling out when it's ready to crawl out?
I don't know. I think when it hatches, it just leaves a crater in you, right? Like, I don't know if there's ever a good scenario, a good outcome, other than get it out of me as quickly as possible. Or kill yourself, you know?
Yeah, good Lord. Is there any way to steer this podcast back to something pleasant?
There's some cousin to it, and I can't remember the name of the fly.
It seems like no.
That lives in the north, like really far north, up where there are caribou, and it lays its eggs in the noses of caribou, and then they end up choking to death on it, and then it survives off of this corpse of this caribou. And the caribou know what the fly looks like, and so they will run away from it. And caribou have run off of cliffs trying to get away from this fly. I'd have to remember the name of it. I'm going to look it up. Caribou cliff fly? I don't know what to even search.
I don't think we need to close this loop. I think we need to finish this episode though.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I could go find all the social stuff if you want. But I do want to give you a chance to talk.
Okay.
About a text you sent.
I have a lot of things to say. If you need time to find social, like I'd be really happy to talk to you about how fraught Beetlejuice the musical was.
No, I don't care about that. There's a text. You frequently text me in the middle of the night, and I have to just be like, I'm not answering this right now. So there's a lot of texts that I have from Dan that just go completely unanswered. Because he's just in the middle of something, and he's like, and now I got to share this with somebody. You texted me the other night, we could fix the world if more people would listen to Farrakhan. So what is Farrakhan like a band? What is that? Okay, Daniel has done the right thing and just left the conversation. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow, somebody named Michael or Bacon. I have no idea who this is. You can follow him at Make Me Bacon, Please, PLS. Or you can follow Quick Question at QQ_Soren and Dan. You can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. And you can follow, find, hire our producer, sound engineer, editor, Gabe, somewhere. Or you can go to his website and just look at it, because it's not done yet. His name is Game Harder, and it's GabeHarder.com. Okay, bye.